Hello, sugars. Well, I hope you had a good Valentine's Day. Or if you're, hey, sugars, hopefully you're still celebrating. Good for you. You live your life. You do it. This episode is hopefully a pretty inspirational episode. It's with Aaron Anastasi, and he's an author. And he is also, I pause because Aaron, it makes me feel better kind of about myself, as he's one of those people who, he just does a lot of shit. And I mean that in a good way. So, and he's somebody who has started things late in life, such as acting and I mean, just a musician. You'll listen that he's kind of one of those people who, my dad would probably say doesn't know what he wanted to do. But to me, I feel like is a very ambitious person. And when he is passionate about something and he's excited about something, he goes towards it and moves forward. And that's inspiring to me. So Aaron Anastasi, he wrote a book. It's in the, you can see the show links before. It's called The Voice of Your Dreams. And what I like about Aaron's book, which I actually read, which I really liked, is that we both kind of, you've heard me talk on the show about being a narrative therapist and how we kind of look at life through a story metaphor and how you write your life story and, you know, all that good feel-good Oprah bullshit that we talk about. Well, Aaron likes that Oprah feel-good bullshit too. And so, but he's not boring. So we had a really good talk about that. So a lot of this conversation is me asking a little bit about his life, because he's also an amazingly successful online singing teacher, makes like 7 figures a year from that. So, and that's a whole other, I could do a whole other show with him about how you do that and online business. And I don't even know. Hell, I just feel like I learned, got the hang of Twitter like 6 months ago. I don't even understand Snapchat. I don't get it. People send me stuff. I feel like I'm being attacked. I watch it, it goes away, and then I don't remember. It's too much. I hate it. Anyway. Sorry, what was I talking? Oh, Aaron. He's also cute. Yeah, I said, and straight. So, and he looks like he was in a boy band. He's got that little look, you know. Some people are just meant to be famous. But anyway, really heartfelt podcast. Really like his heart. I really like what he's striving to do in his life. And you'll see, because I quoted it like 10 times. I really liked his book. It was an easy read. And again, with like kind of self-help books, you see a lot of books where people are like, it just feels like bullshit. It's like you wrote this book because you just wanted to write a book. Whereas this was like, no. Again, it's one of those things where he was passionate about and he decided to lean into it and go towards it. And he has such respectable ambition. So anyway, sugars, I hope you enjoy the show. I'll see you at the end to talk about and remind you other stuff that's going on in my life. Okay. Okay, what? Hello, everybody. It's a podcast. Welcome to the Dear Maddie Show. This is Matt Morris, always, because then that would be weird if somebody else hosted the show and still called it Dear Maddie. That would just be weird, Aaron, right? sorry, Gady D. I'm here with author, fellow singer, as I'm a singer too, but not a legit one like you, and fellow, I just want to say, I like to say do-gooder, and just wonderful person as I'm getting to know him, Aaron Anastasi. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you so much, Matt. Happy to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
I know. The California gave us a beautiful no-rain day today. It's, man, it is pretty.
Yeah, it's like spring weather. It's awesome.
It is. Now, okay, so everybody, sugars, I know I've been this 2017, I've been going off the rails here. I've been doing, you know, some talking about some speaking stuff. And last week I had the ladies from Pantsuit Politics on and all this kind of stuff. Well, today I don't have any advice questions because – honestly, someone wrote me a question, an advice question that I think is also trying to come on to me. So I might not read that on the air. But so writing your questions at DearMaddieShow.com, because we have plumb run out, sugar. So I thought Aaron's coming on the show today, and Aaron's written a book called The Voice of Your Dreams, Turn Down the Voices of Limitation and Turn Up the Volume of Success. Did I say it right? I did.
Yeah.
All right. I'm always so fucking worried about. Oh yeah, you can say fuck on this show, Aaron. You can say whatever you want.
Sweet.
But I read Aaron's book, and I really did, and I was just kind of like, you know, I have so many people that write into the show that are just, wanting to get shit started in their life and just seem really freaking stuck. And then Nicole Holland introduced us together, and she was like, I think you two would get along. And then I like read your stuff, your website, and read your book, and I was like, I feel like you're like my straight doppelganger. That's what I feel like you are, Aaron. How do you feel about that?
I feel great about that. I'm honored to be your straight doppelganger.
So I want to get to all your good stuff. And but first of all, Sugar, tell us where you're from, a little bit about your life. Let us settle into the Anastasi. I'm going to say your name like 10 times because I love it.
Good. Just say it. It's my, people used to ask me if it was my stage name, and I would just say yes, but it is also my birth name, Anastasi.
I like it. So yeah, so where'd you grow up? Tell us that.
I grew up not far from where I currently am. I grew up in Orange County, California, Huntington Beach.
Okay.
And yeah, I lived there for the first, 18-ish years of my life. And then I just started moving around. I moved to San Diego and Vail, Colorado, and Atlanta, Georgia, and Cleveland, Tennessee, and then Princeton, New Jersey, and then did kind of moved around a lot after that. But what can I say about my life? I always was a lover of music, and I have, that's part of the reason I created I have an online singing lesson program called Superior Singing Method. And so that's part of the reason I created that. I did a lot of touring growing up. I songwriter, singer, guitar player, and did that for many years, over a decade. And I still do some of that, but mostly my time now is spent, acting, training as an actor, auditioning and being on set, and then coaching.
You do a lot of life coaching, right?
I do a lot of coaching, a lot of executive coaching or life coaching. Yeah. Love that.
Also, ladies and some gentlemen, he's real hot. I'm just going to say it, Aaron. You have good hair. You have tattoos on your arms. You look like you were in a rock band, and then you read your book, and you're like, holy shit. He's this like wonderful, nice guy with a good heart. I'm telling you, you're like, you're emotional porn to a lot of women out there. I'm just going to tell your wife she's lucky.
I'll hit her up and tell her. She'll appreciate it.
So were you traveling all over? Was this stuff like, were you a military kid? Did you travel with your family? Or was it you were an adult and you were just kind of seeing the world and kind of wanting to discover yourself? Or was it a job based?
I've always kind of just traveled where it made the most sense to pursue the thing that I want to pursue the most. Mm. And so first it was San Diego because I wanted to be I wanted to surf in San Diego, and I want to be able to surf really easily, like to go down to Mexico because there was really good surf down in Mexico, and it was not very crowded. So that was the first with San Diego. And then from there, my brother calls me up. He's like, and we'd been snowboarding like locally a lot growing up. And so he was like, hey, let's actually move like to where we could do this legit. And so we moved to Vail, Colorado, and then I became like a pro snowboarder for a while and was a snowboard instructor. And then I got really into like rock climbing and kayaking and all that stuff. So I went down to South America for a little under a year. And so that's what always brought me to the next thing. Then I was like, oh, I want to go to college, and then I want to go to grad school. And so that took college in Tennessee and grad school in New Jersey. And obviously now I'm in LA because I'm an actor. Where do I need to go? So that's what it always was my passion brought me to the location that made the most sense for that particular craft.
You're like an Elizabeth Gilbert character. You're like one of the guys that she would meet in Eat, Pray, Love, Aaron. Are you? Or like Under the Tuscan Sun. But I'm telling you, boy, just you're in the right field, Sugar. Let me just say. So if in like, what do you think? Like, I don't know. I'm kind of I don't know why I'm just on this, because you've lived in so many places and like you've settled now in California. It's interesting to me because in reading your book, what I love about your book is, and I legitimately do love this about your book, is that not to use a buzzword that everybody's using, but it is, there's a lot of transparency. You really write about your own experience in this book, and honestly, your own failures and your own insecurities and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so this is my question. In reading your book and seeing, like, again, how just transparent you are and how you often talk about your failures and insecurities, but Sugar, if I'm reading your bio and kind of listening to your talk and I'm seeing how much you've traveled and kind of, you know, I think like a lot of people are listening to you talk about, oh, well, my brother said, oh, I should go to Vail, and oh, I should go down and go rock climbing. They're like, holy crap, where does a person get the confidence to do that. But because I guess I want to know on the timeline, when did you get your master's kind of in psychology and philosophy? Like, I guess when did like this start, like confident? I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to ask? It's like, I think on the outside, people, and we hear this a lot, people would look at your story as somebody who's been confident from like day one. But in your book, you talk about how you fight, how you really had to work on that and develop that and strengthen that voice. So what's been your relationship with confidence like?
Yeah, my relationship with confidence, that is a really interesting question. When I, early on, I don't think it was about confidence as much as it was just like a lust for adventure. I think that like it didn't even seem like confidence. I was just young and it was just like, this is what we do next and this is what we do next. It was more that first. The confidence piece actually for me, as I got older, it became more difficult to be confident. It became more, I had so many more limiting voices, maybe in my mid-20s, where I started really doubting myself. So the master's degree, that was, so I'd gone to South America. I was there for about a year. I came back and then I was like, I want to go to school. And I had been out of high school for about 5 years at that point. But I was like, no, I really want to get educated. And so that's when I went to college. And then I went straight from college to grad school there. So it was like 7 years. Grad school was a 3-year program where it's kind of like a, almost like a triple master's program. It was like a 96 graduate hour program.
Oh my God.
It was insane. Yeah. But also awesome. So after that, it was after that that I think my confidence started waning, which is a weird thing to say and weird thing to even think, but I had all these limiting voices around, could a music career work? Could an acting career work? Like, could I actually, have a career in entertainment? And that's where a lot of like the stuff that you see in the book, all these thoughts of like, I don't have what it takes. I'm not good enough. I'm too old. I'm too this, I'm too that. That's where all those thoughts started to come up. But I feel like as a kid, I was just kind of young and dumb and I just didn't know better.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think? Cause I feel like, I relate a lot to that. You know, one of my friends who I've had on the show, who's a blogger and or not a blogger, but she's not a life coach, but definitely a self-help influencer, Dawn McCoy. She talks about how a lot of times she feels like that as sometimes as adults, we're trying to get back to what that child between like 6 and 8 years old was in love with and passionate about. She's like, it's like we're trying to refine a part of ourselves. So, and in saying that, I relate to what you're saying that much, even I was, I would have some, with being just gay in Oklahoma and effeminate, I would have some insecurity about that. But for the most part, I was more brazen. So what do you think it is about, what do you think happens in the mid-20s, at least for you, or maybe for other people as well, that kind of influences and strengthens kind of the critic voices in our life?
For me, there was just more at stake now. Like I was older and there was more societal pressure to like have shit together and be, I think it was that. And also this idea of like, I'm going to pursue a career in acting in my late 20s, early 30s. It's like, dude, you needed to start that like 15 years ago. You're like,
I laugh because. I laugh because that I really related in your book that I have the same story. You know, I grew up singing, and then I ended up getting my undergraduate degree at North Texas in opera and vocal performance.
Wow.
And so I did all that, but literally I did it. And I even talked about this year. I just talked about it in like a couple. It's a Dear Aunt Maddie episode where I spoke in an arts camp I went to, and I think I aired this like 3 or 4 episodes ago. But I talk about I always wanted to be an actor. But I never auditioned to be an actor at this arts camp, I didn't, even though I wanted to pursue acting in college, I did music instead because it was what I was good at and what people were noticing me for. And I was so scared to do acting that I did the same thing. I didn't start acting until I was 29 years old. So I relate so much to what you wrote about. I haven't heard that story a lot. Because you think of people moving out and I look at people that are like 22 that move out here and pursue acting, and I'm like, holy fuck, how do you have the confidence to do that? So when you told the story, I literally was like, Aaron knows me. He knows me.
Yeah, and I had a similar path. And what you said is that music, it was weird because I actually had some successes with music. And of course, my singing program's been really massively successful. But is that I had some successes in music, but music, even though it was an artistic endeavor, and people were like, oh, Aaron's an artist and this, and I was touring and putting out all these records and all this stuff. But music was actually a hiding place for me. Yep. Even though it was artistic, it became a safe place for me because there was a certain ease with it. Now, I never blew up and got like super famous as a musician, but I made decent money and I traveled a lot and got, you know, played for some really big crowds and stuff. But even in that, it was a hiding place because my deepest, darkest secret was that I really want to be an actor, but I would never tell anybody that, and especially after I moved to LA because everybody wanted to be an actor. And I was like, it's so cliche, I can't say it.
But you sure did, Sugar. I'm sure you probably read, have you done The Artist's Way before?
Oh, yeah, I love that. In fact, that's the book that got me, because after I graduated from Princeton, I did my master's degree at Princeton Theological Seminary. After I did that, I lived in an adjacent town for a few years, and I was like a youth music director at this church and just like a, you know, counselor type person. And then when I moved back, I moved to Orange County for a few months. And I was like, forget music. I'm done with it, because I had connected with this major record producer, and he was like he had won a Grammy and a Dove Award and all the stuff, and things were going really well. And then like kind of the carpet was pulled out from under that whole thing. So I was just like, forget it. I'm so fed up. So I came out to live in Orange County where I'd grown up. And while I was there, I was like, you know what? I'll just run a little, because I had bought a house when I came in town. I was like, I'll just run a little Artist Way group. I've never done this. It sounds fun. So I went through the Artist Way and I had hosted a group at my house, and it started getting me fired up about being an artist again. And then my buddy in LA at the time, he's actually in San Diego now and he's my business partner still, but he was like, hey dude, my band is, we're starting to blow up. Island Records is looking at us, but we lost our bass player. But I'm a guitar player, singer, songwriter. He's like, dude, you could play bass. I was like, hell yeah, I could play bass. And so I got a bass and I got a bass rig and I learned all his songs on bass. And then I came up to LA to play some gigs. We played like Knitting Factory and some other bigger gigs in town. And then I was just like, screw it, I'm moving up to LA. So it's funny, the Artist Way is actually what got me back to LA and got me fired up again to realize that, no, I'm an artist and I've got a calling as an artist, and I'm never going to be truly happy unless I'm being an artist.
Again, Sugar, get out of my head. I had a very similar experience why I started my podcast and a lot of stuff. But why I brought that up, which, by the way, I know my listeners have heard me talk about this before, but The Artist Way, Julie Cohen, it's an amazing workbook. Get it. But after you get The Voice of Your Dreams, after you get Aaron's book first. But no, actually, I think they're really great companion books. But the reason why I brought that up is because for me, music, you know, she talks about shadow careers, and music was a shadow career. Even honestly, getting my master's in therapy, I love it, but it's a shadow career. It doesn't get at the heart of what I wanted to do talk shows. I want to be like, you know, I was like, my friends call me the gay white Oprah. Like, that's in my heart what I always wanted to do. And with that and acting, that's what I was scared of doing. So when you were talking about music, it was your shadow career, I think.
I think so too. I absolutely think so.
That's so cool. I was in an Uber. It was before the boycott and everything, all that. But anyway, I was talking to an actress and she like had done The Artist Way and she had met Julie Cohen and was talking about how nice she was. So just so you know, apparently she's a great person, which is nice to hear. So first of all, how's acting going, by the way? Since I want to hear how that's going for you.
Sure. Better and better. You know, I've been training for pretty consistently for about 5 years and like hardcore for the past 3 years. And I train right now at Leslie Kahn and Company, and I've been there for about 6 or 7 months. And
yeah,
it's intense and I love it. My class and I, we rehearse, you know, 3 to 4 hours a day, every day. And then we have a 5-hour class on Friday. So my skills are really, really ramping up. And so in the past 6 weeks, I booked a commercial, and then I booked a co-star for a TV show. And then I booked a film that I just actually shot 2 weeks ago that I was playing a cop. And so I've had a lot more bookings since I've been at LeslieCon and really have punched up the specificity of my acting. So thank you for asking. It's going well. And I just had a 3-hour rehearsal today. I've got another 3-hour one tonight. I'm like hardcore. I'm like either all in or I'm not in with all of my passions.
Yeah, you are like that. Leslie's great. I've done the first comedic intensive, which you're right. Mm-hmm. It's like, woo, it's a lot. But you should be on her podcast, Conversations. You would totally be great on that, just from your perspective. You should check out that podcast that she does on her show. It's not her, but it's another guy, I believe.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I actually haven't listened to it yet, but I do like the idea of that. And she does really great. She has people come in and do seminars with a lot of different like mindful stuff. And eventually I would like to talk to her about that. I gave her a copy of my book and she read it and stuff. So she kind of knows where I'm coming from on that side of things as well. And her sister's actually a life coach.
Oh, I didn't know that. And so as we're talking along, so I want to say two things for everybody. I know we're talking about a lot of artist stuff today because Aaron and I both are artists. That said, the book is not about if you're an artist and you want to start being an actor or you're a singer. No, it truly is about when I was reading this, I thought of several women I knew back home in Oklahoma where I'm from, like one of them who is interested in doing baking stuff. I mean, if you're just interested in starting something in your life, whether it's a business to a spiritual practice to just being a better parent to your child or a better person to yourself, I think the book is applicable. So I'm just telling people that even though we might speak a lot of nerd artist stuff because we're just in that world today, that don't think it excludes you because I don't think it's written that way at all, which I liked about that as well. Because also, too, don't you think everybody's an artist in some way?
I do. There's actually a great book called The Artisan's Soul that talks a lot about that I love. So I do think everybody's an artist, and I do agree with you that my book is, if you're an artist, if you're an entrepreneur, my book will be like, you know, living water to your soul. But if you have any pursuit and any dream at all, it's that. And the dream, like you said, could be anything. It could be cooking. It could be being a dentist. It doesn't matter. But my book is just a motivational tool, but also a very practical tool on how to work through a lot of the limiting voices that we have. You know, the idea is that we all have this voice of our dreams that calls to us, you know, and a lot of us are in our shadow careers, but we have this voice of our dreams that's calling to us and trying to push through, but it can be hard to hear and hard to really follow when the voices of limitation are shouting so much louder. So it kind of helps us walk through that and get some victory over that and get some momentum and turn our dream, like pull our dream out of the future. We have so many dreams like, oh, I wish, I hope, and I'm wishing upon a star, but that's so future based and it's so out there. But this book is, for me, is helping people grab that out of the future, put it in the present moment, turn it into a project and start working on it for 5 minutes a day today. Like, let's get this thing going.
Yes. You have, I'm going to find it later. I love this quote you talk about in chapter 5. It's the beginning of chapter 5. I'm on a Kindle, everybody, so I don't have right page numbers. That's the only thing. I can't be like Oprah and say on page 200. But I can say at the beginning of chapter 5, you have a sentence that I read like 5 times. And I'm not going to read your whole book because then I want people to buy it because I want them to support you. But I just made some notes. But you say all fear comes from contemplating the future. I just want to say that again because I read that and I went, holy fuck, that's so true. All fear comes from contemplating the future. Because I thought about all the things that I had been scared of in my life or that I was currently scared of in my life. And I realized they were all because none of them were thinking about the present moment or looking at the evidence of my past, of the things that kind of counteract what fear is telling me. The evidence that, you know, I've never failed. Like, I've never been destitute. I've never been homeless. I've never, you know, had to move in on people's couches or anything. But yet that is where my fear takes me as an actor. Like, if I don't book this gig, if I don't hustle and do this, and I'm going to – literally, the thought in my head's like, I don't want to be homeless, which is so foreign to me because I've never been homeless and I've never been close to that. And luckily, you know, a lot of people are. But I just love that all fear comes from contemplating the future. How the fuck did you figure that out, Aaron? Because that was like a bombshell for me.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, for me, I honestly, I probably read it somewhere, but But for me, I just got to realize that if I stay in the present moment and I get into action toward that thing, that action eradicates the fear, because the fear has nothing to do with the present moment. Nobody can handle the future. Nobody can, especially because the mind automatically projects worst case scenarios as we picture the future. The mind just automatically does that. It thinks it's helping us out. It thinks it's helping us prepare for the bad things to come down the pike, but it actually really jacks us up and creates a lot of anxiety when we try to live in the future. But when we just pull it out of the future and say, no, I can handle anything in the present moment. I can't handle the future. No one can. But in the present moment, I could always handle that. And all that ever exists is the present moment. And so if we can just get into action toward that thing we're most afraid of, and the thing we're most afraid of is almost always the thing that's going to be most important to us and the most important thing to do. If we could just get into action toward that thing right now in the present moment, even for 3 to 5 minutes, action eradicates the fear and it shifts the focus away from what we're afraid of and me, and I'm not going to be safe, to the end user of who is this going to serve? Who is this book going to serve? Who is this podcast going to serve? Who is this performance going to serve? Who is this cooking, you know, who's being a chef, like who's going to be served by that? Shifting it to the end user and getting into action. It like fear just like goes poof and eradicates. It's incredible.
That's so true. Because you also talk about something I related to. I'm trying to look for it because I noted it, but whatever, I remember it. I don't know where it is in the book. But you talked about, like, I'm someone, if I have something to do, I say, well, I need to clean my apartment first. I need to clean out my desk. And then I'm start organizing. You tell a story. You're like, I start doing this, and then it's lunchtime. And then I wish I could find it. Maybe I didn't highlight it. But I love that part because I feel like, don't you feel like a lot of people, or I think almost all of us do, we almost, instead of leaning into action, like you were saying, and leaning into the uncomfortable and kind of walking through it, we almost feel like, well, I've got to get rid of that anxiety first. I've got to get rid of it, and then I can do the thing. But not realizing that in doing the thing gets rid of the anxiety.
That's exactly right. The one of the things that I talk about in the book is that the inspiration you're waiting for in order to start is on the other side of starting. And it could be the same thing. The loss of anxiety you're waiting for, you know, that losing the anxiety you're waiting for in order to start literally is on the other side of starting. So let's just get started and get moving. And then it loses that anxiety, loses that. You know, we think, oh, I'll just do this. I'll just clean up. I'll do all these little small things and then I'll just feel better in my mind and then I'll get started. There's actually a really great book called Eat That Frog that talks about the idea of, it's Tom, I think it was, what's his name, guy who wrote, Mark Twain. He says, if you eat a live frog in the beginning of every morning, it will probably be the worst thing that you've had to do that day. And so the rest of the day will go great because it's all downhill from there. So the idea is that, what is that thing you fear the most? What is that thing that brings you the most anxiety? What are you avoiding the most? If you do that first, eat that frog, then your goals will be attained so much faster and you'll be infused with new energy and you'll have the wherewithal and the clarity to get all the other stuff done. But do that thing first.
And if that's hard for you to do, then get a therapist or get a life coach and find a support system for that. Plug, go to Aaronside for that. No, okay, so now I want to talk about, because this is kind of a big component. Again, hopefully I'm not giving away too many pearls, but I'm telling you, I really loved your book. So I want to talk about, you talk about old dreamers versus new dreamers. And that's a big tenet, I think, you come back to a lot in your book to differentiate mindsets. So explain to us the difference of an old dreamer and a new dreamer.
Yeah, part of it I kind of hinted toward a little bit, this idea of old dreamers are the ones that they wish and they hope and they, you know, they say someday, and I want to do this thing. But an old dreamer says, no, not someday. Today I'm gonna start doing this. So like old dreamers, you know, they wish, they hope, they long for, and they're without a sense of passion. New dreamers say, you know what? I choose to be who I am. So for me, it would be like, I choose the fact that I am an actor. And so what do actors naturally do? Okay, well, I need to get a reel so that I can get an agent and a manager. Okay, so what's my next step? I'm going to write a small short film, and then I'm going to recruit people in order to do this film so I can get, you know, it's like, what are the smallest actions that are going to lead me toward these things rather than having this big overwhelming dream in the future? And then old dreamers also, they live reactively and out of their automatic responses, and that continually produces the same unwanted results, like circumstances dictate their destiny. Mm-hmm. Whereas new dreamers, they identify their limiting voices and they live out their commitments, and you know, they're the authors of their own lives and the authors of their own future. And sometimes I'll get some pushback from my clients, like, no, I can't be the author of my life. I can't like just create this and pretend I'm somebody I'm not. But when we're the author of our life and we say, I choose that I am an actor, I'm going to do what an actor does and eventually have what an actor does, these roles. Once we choose that and start moving that direction, that actually is the most authentic way that we can live. That author and authentic, it's the same root word. When I'm the author of my life, I'm actually being the most authentic. So I break it down in a lot of different ways. One other thing is that an old dreamer is fear of failure, more poignantly, fear of looking like a failure, and that keeps them stuck. Whereas new dreamers understand that failure is not a problem that they'll ever face. It's actually, that is the pathway to greatness. That is, failure is the path. As Winston Churchill says, he says, success is stumbling from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. So on and on. That's kind of my juxtaposition, those things.
Well, and you even talk about this in chapter one, because I highlighted it. You talk a couple of things that you just hit on. You talk about when you improve a little each day, eventually big things occur. And that's, well, you didn't say that, but you quoted someone who said that. But I thought that was such a good, again, you just summarized that so beautifully, where it's such big things are overwhelming. That's the thing, is just, I know from coaching and counseling people, is that just piecemeal your dreams. I always say it's okay to just ingest a little bit like of action. If that's whatever, any action is better than stagnation, which is doing nothing. I just, again, people, read this fucking book. I loved it. Okay. So, no, because you also said something. Sorry, I'm looking through my notes. Oh, so you talk about, and since we're talking about being the author of your own life, and a lot of my listeners are used to me talking about that, because I often talk about, again, like narrative therapy. Again, I asked earlier and you went, oh, that's an interesting question. That's a very narrative question I asked you when I said, what is your relationship like with confidence? Because we view everything as a relationship. So if you're like, you're not an actor, Aaron, you're Aaron, but you have a relationship with acting. And so that's how we look at your life. And so there's other things that we could do that you probably think would be really cool, but people would probably fall asleep if we started nerding out and talking about that. But yeah, basically it is, we're looking at the your story through a life metaphor, and often that, because I think what we're doing, you and I both, I think, have found, is that we internalize so much that when we externalize it and look at it from a, you talk about this a lot. I remember saying this to my own therapist a lot. I would say, hey, I kind of have this, oh, wait moment where I feel like I have to step back and look at the bigger picture. And you talk about that a lot, about looking at the bigger picture. Because I think when we get caught up in, in the minutiae of the problem, we just feel overwhelmed. It feels bigger than us. We should just hang out. Okay. Now, something you said about new dreamers that I liked, and what chapter is this from? Because I want to tell people what chapter this is from. This is from chapter 11. It's all made up anyway. And I love that you talked about, because I really resonated with this. You say, one of the most helpful new dreamer realizations is that all of our stories are made up. All of them. Now, some are certainly based on more objective truth than others, but all of them are made up. If this is true, then we might as well intentionally pick a story that serves our visions rather than the one that scares us out of action and into complacency. That is such a metaphor for my life, and also kind of what even narrative therapy do. It's like we always are looking at, because I think you're so right, not to get too philosophical, but we are, you know, what is reality anyway? And I know that we have these things that, yes, you have to pay bills, yes, you have to feed your family, you know, all those type of things, but it's like, what's wrong with just because we all have a certain history, but what our perspective that we choose it goes back to when you talk about this a lot too, like adding choice point into that, and that our perspective can change based on what we choose to look at in our history, not necessarily ignore, but what we choose to emphasize, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's like the quote, I think it's Tom Robbins. He says, it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
Oh, yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that in there.
The idea that what we look back and what we choose to remember, you know, we have these 20 negative memories that we review over and over and think we had a crappy childhood. But then if we actually go back and think of 20 really great memories, which of course all of us can, and we rehearse those, start telling those stories, we start thinking, actually, I had a pretty great childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for the past. We could actually take that same idea and put it into the future. So for me, like what you're saying with this chapter, I had a thought in my mind that I didn't realize was a limiting voice, but the thought was, I'm too old, I'm too far behind, like as far as like acting went. And I what the thought that I used instead of that was, I've come so far and I've only just begun. And that actually rang true to me. It's not just like, oh, that's a nice little mantra. It was true to my brain. And so anytime I got discouraged about that, I just repeated in myself, no, I've come so far and I've only just begun. What have I come so far? Oh, I got an agent. I got this. I booked that. I did that. And I've only been doing this for X amount of time. So changing the story that we live in radically changes our perspective. And the last thing I'll say about this is that I love, there's a book called Three Laws of Performance, which is just a fantastic book. But one of the things that it talks about in there is that when we create a really clear-cut vision of the future, what it does is it changes what we live into. We live into the future that we see coming toward us, not the actual future we'll get someday. We live into the one that we see coming toward us. So if we can get really clear about the vision that we have and make like clear declarations, and I think I talk about this in the book, like, for example, my wife and I, we decided, you know, I had been in debt, like school debt. I think it was like, what was it, $30,000?
Yeah, I think you said 30,000, yeah.
For like a decade or something. And I was just paying my $139.944 or whatever forever. And I didn't even think that I could get out of it. But we created this really clear, compelling vision that we're going to be out of debt in 9 months. And we got out of debt in right about 9 months because we live into the future we see coming toward us, not the one that we'll actually get. So it's so powerful to create not just a vision like the idea of like the law of attraction. If I just think of it, I'll get it. I don't necessarily think that's true, but I believe in the law of creation, though. I create a vision, and then I create the path and the small steps to getting to that vision, and then it becomes realized. But without getting clear about what it is in the first place, you're just where I was for the 10 years of just paying off this little thing and thinking you can never get out of debt. So that's why it's powerful to me.
Amen. Hashtag truth talk. We're truth talking on the Dear Maddie show today. Because you even talk about, okay, this is in... Oh, what, I can't figure it out on my thing. It's in a chapter. But you talk about the limiting voice. And again, I'm going to read this other quote because I read this quote actually to my boyfriend. I stopped and I was like, babe, you have to listen to this. But you wrote, the very expression of a complaint is a declaration that you are a powerless... let me start that again. I fucked it up, Aaron. Jesus.
Oh,
all right.
Man.
I know. And I'm not going to edit it out because I hate editing. All right. Okay. but anyway, so you talk about the very expression of a complaint is a declaration that you are in a powerless victim state, whereas understanding the hidden, unarticulated areas of the racket allows us the opportunity to take a measure of ownership and jump back into the driver's seat of our lives. That resonated with me so much, again, from my own personal, but I think maybe you relate to this as being a coach and me being a therapist, that isn't it shocking to you how, or I guess maybe it's not anymore, but when people come to us and they literally feel like they don't, it saddens me. They feel like they don't have a choice in their lives.
Yeah, it is sad because it's not true. Obviously, you know that it's not true, that, but we just end up making similar choices over and over again to where it seems like we have no choice, but we're actually just renewing choices that we made. And part of the reason is like what you say, these complaints. One of the things I say in my book is that our the walls of our prison are lined with our complaints. Like we're in this prison of our own making of our complaints for the same reason of that we live into the future that we see coming toward us. If the future, because the future we see coming toward us, if we're complaining all the time, is this really negative complaining kind of future? And we are pulling those things into our life because we're living into them as if they're true, and we can't see anything different. And so, yeah, we have infinite choice and infinite possibility.
Yeah, because I always talk about, was it Viktor Frankl who wrote that book? What was that book? The one where he's...
At Auschwitz?
Yeah, but he's like hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I always use that example, not to like take it there, but I'm like, that's so powerful to me that it's somebody in that situation. I mean, I don't use it to make people feel bad, but you know, where people are going, oh, you know, they feel hopeless that they like can't, you know... And I get this, I've been there, that they can't like go to the gym twice a week. And that is like so, or go once. That makes them so distraught. But I'm like, but this person in this moment, they had a choice. He had a choice to interpret things how he wanted to interpret. And I think your book is such a good example. That quote that I just read is that there's this choice of how he wanted to perceive his story and what narrative he wanted to write. And I just think that it's for everybody. It's just so it's like you said about problems. My boyfriend and I try to do this. Like when we have if one of us get pissed off because we failed at something, and it's good because I have him to kind of echo this back to me, but we ask each other, the other one will say, well, what did we learn? And then as soon as we start thinking about what we've learned or what did we learn from a situation, it changes, because then I start immediately feeling, even if I still feel shitty, a part of me begins to feel A, empowered, and B, because I'm curious and I like to learn, that part of me gets excited. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you were saying, reality is what we make it in the moment. I know that's super meta, but it's true. So in that moment, we are creating our reality. So when we're complaining, we're creating a certain reality, and it affects the way we feel and it affects the way we see our future. And then when we start getting into what do we learn and what are we grateful for, it completely changes our perspective, changes our reality, and changes our feelings, because our thoughts are different. It's so powerful.
It's stupid, unbelievably powerful. Okay, one more thing, and then we can start. I can let you breathe a little bit. But in chapter 6, okay, you talk about chapter 6. Where is the quote? You talk about tell us the analogy, because I can't find it in my little notes. Where you talk about about us having a GPS system.
Sure. You know what? Yeah.
I love that. And then I won't share any more from the book. Read it, people. It's obviously really great. I loved it. It's only $11.77 on Amazon. Fucking buy it. But yeah, so talk about, because again, you described this metaphor and I went, whoa, I've never heard that before. That's so helpful.
Yeah, so what our thoughts and beliefs, and you know, the book's a lot about limiting voices, what it is that we believe creates the world and the reality that we're living in. So a lot of my clients will come to me, or let me just say my own very specifically with my own life. So I believed that I was a very hard worker, and I was very, because I was working really hard, but mostly just spinning my wheels. I didn't realize there was a shift of being and a shift of what I believed that needed to happen. I was just working really hard, really hard, really hard. And there seemed to just be a really low ceiling to hard work. Like I had a certain amount of accomplishments just from hard work alone, but there was something else that needed a shift. I couldn't get beyond this thing. I couldn't get any like financial success. There's just a lot of things I just couldn't seem to get. So what had happened is I all the problems that I had and all the solutions that I had were contained into this GPS system, a broken GPS system in like my beliefs about myself and the world and what was possible was broken. So no matter what address that I typed into this GPS system, I kept getting failure or frustration or this isn't working or this sucks. No matter what address, it was going to the same address of this isn't working. And so what I needed to do is I needed to fix the GPS system so that different types of solutions could come in. So when I actually typed in an address, it would go to that address and not a different one. And the practical way of what happened with that was taking my thoughts and beliefs and beginning to interrogate them and find out what was real and what wasn't real. You see, I was living life. I don't know if you've heard this analogy, maybe you use it with your clients, this whole idea of do, have, be. I was living, if I do this thing, whatever it is, I will have all these things that I want, and then I'll be this thing. I'll be an actor, or I'll be successful, or I'll be happy. And then kind of the part of the shift was, no, I'm going to start with the level of being. I choose to be happy. I choose to be a good husband. I choose to be an actor. I choose to be these things. Okay, if I choose to be these things, what naturally do people who are these things already, not trying to be, what do they do? And then you get to the do. Okay, they naturally do these things, and then eventually I'll have these other things, but the have is now just becomes an afterthought. I'm just happy being, like right now, I'm happy being an actor, and I get what you're saying. I'm Aaron, and I've got a relationship to acting, but I'm happy being an actor and doing what actors do. I spend 25 hours a week like working on stuff for class and then, of course, other stuff, but I'm happy doing the things of the way that I'm being. So once I started rewriting all the negative thoughts and all that, that was the shift and that was the fix of the GPS system. So now when I type in addresses, I get to the places that I want to go more quickly.
Well, and I'm not going to go off on this gay DD tangent, but I could, Sugars, where, yes, I do have gay DD, Aaron. But I love to just, again, what I admire about you is, because I read a lot of like Tim Ferriss, and my boyfriend's really into entrepreneur stuff. And so just, I think this idea too of building passive income and stuff. So, because you're such like, you're very accomplished too, like a Renaissance person to me, and the fact that this artistry, but also what you've been able to do with your business. It's really, it's inspiring. It truly is inspiring because through that, your life, you've really been able to create a life that you want, that you love to live, you know, and that's beautiful. That's always great to hear.
Yeah, I do. I do love business. I don't talk a lot about it these days, but I do have, you know, my Superior Singing Method. It is a 7-figure business. It's been great. I've got other businesses. We actually just finally launched a sign language program that we're doing a huge marketing effort toward. It's called Signing Success, and I've got some business partners for that. And then I have two other online programs. So I do actually love business and love the idea of passive income. I want to make as much money as I can with doing the least amount as possible so that I can do the things that I actually need to physically be there for. So I love coaching and I make a good living coaching as well, but I love coaching, but I need to be there for that. I love acting, but I need to be there for that. So until I start making a good living with acting, I let my coaching and my online businesses support me so that I can spend a bunch of time doing stuff that I don't necessarily, you know, with acting get paid all that much for yet.
I'm right there. I'm right there. Hopefully behind you. I'm trying, Sugar. All right. This was a great conversation. I appreciated it so much. And I feel like this is we're gonna go into Chatty Maddie questions because I feel like, you know, short theater is good theater. I'd rather keep people entertained than bored. So Chatty Maddie, 5 questions I ask everyone on every episode. So the first Chatty Maddie question is, number one is, what is your most memorable childhood or favorite childhood smell?
Childhood smell. I know. I think, do you remember the Hostess cherry pie little pocket things that had like the sugary crispy outside? It's got that gooey cherry in the inside. There's something about that smell. And funny, now that I'm saying that, probably the other one is something very similar. Cherry Pop-Tarts. Just that smell, something about cherry.
Oh, wow. See, my brother loved cherry. So for me, it brings back a fond memory, but I hated it. I like the apple, but I used to go, ew. That's funny. Okay. Well, I was going to, you know, another Chatty Matty question is, what is the name of your memoir? I don't know. Would it be The Voice of Your Dreams?
The name of my memoir, It would have something to do with inspiration. Like my big why in life, like I want to find out, like, why am I doing everything that I do? Because like you said, this whole like Renaissance man idea, it's like you do all these different things. That I do a lot of different things. And it's like, why do I do all these different things? And my big why is I want to inspire people to do what inspires them so that they could reach their dreams. So it would be somewhere around there, but maybe it really literally is the voice of your dreams. Because I love pulling the voice of your dreams up, of turning the volume of the voice of your dreams up in people and helping them live their biggest, most heroic lives. I'm so passionate about that.
Well, and again, it's very autobiographical. Did you do the Audible for this? Because you have a great voice. If you didn't, you should have.
I did. I did actually.
Oh, good, 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 good. Because it's like, I don't have that voice, but it's like velvet, Aaron. I like it. It is. It's very like, okay. I don't know why I went, it's not like that. It's not like that at all. I just made it sound like it's were groaning. Yeah. That was the worst compliment ever, Matt. Okay. Let's move on. Okay. Chatty Matty number three. What is the best piece of advice you'd wished you had taken earlier?
Best piece of advice I wish I'd taken earlier. One mentor that I had said, and this is so simple and so silly, but it was like, it really impacted me and changed the course of my life. I was trying to figure out, hey, should I go to college now or should I just start working and doing the things that I want to do? And he said, this is one of the wisest men, and you would know if I said his name, but one of the wisest men I've ever met and had the honor of being mentored by. He said, well, you can, I was like 22 at the time or something. He said, well, you could be 30 with a degree or 30 without a degree. And it was this simple statement like exploded in my mind, because it was this idea of like, we are creating the future moment by moment. Like we decide right now what our future looks like. And that was just like a real aha moment for me.
That's a good one. I'm glad I asked that. That's a good one. You could, yeah, because it's so simple sometimes, and we always ask, you know, it. I mean, the true deep questions, I think, there's such a simplicity to them that, again, what I think what's great about the voice of your dreams and what you're trying to hopefully get people to shift and seeing is that when you do stop looking at the limiting voices, or often on the show I talk about the critic versus the muse, and when you stop listening to just your critics, then the simplicity of the muse kind of of your successful voices just stands out so much easier. I just can't say that enough. All right, Chatty Matty number four. What day would be your Groundhog Day? So what day of your life that you've lived so far that you're like, I could do this over and over?
I would say my wife and I kind of have a Groundhog Day thing that we do. Like our favorite date night that we just groundhog is we go to the observatory and we go watch a show at the observatory and we look at the, you know, beautiful sights of the city. We love the observatory. And then we go down to kind of in your neck of the woods, actually. And we go to Mozza, the pizzeria, Mozza Pizza,
yeah,
on Melrose and Highland. And we have dinner and we have a great time. And then after that, we go to our favorite ice cream spot, which is, it used to be Sweet Rose, but now it is Salt and Straw. So we go to the Salt and Straw in Larchmont. And I could literally do that every day for the rest of my life and never need anything else with the woman that I love.
Oh, that's, again, Aaron, the Griffith Park Observatory, probably my favorite place in Los Angeles. It always, when the narrator says we are stardust, it always makes me cry. In that video, I love. Yep. Have you ever the narrator, the woman who sounds kind of like Carol Channing? She's like, Copernicus said, back in the day there were millions of stars. I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking
She's
about.
She's great. There's the other woman. The blonde hair woman, she's amazing. I remember when I went with my friend Jake, who's gayer than I am, if that's even possible. And we walked out and he was sobbing and he looked at her. And he said, you're the Meryl Streep of the planetarium. she was so just like, who are these queens? But anyway, okay. Last Chatty Matty question. When are you most inspired? And it can either be in your life or a time of day. When are you most inspired?
I am most inspired. I have a morning routine. I have a morning routine that I wake up and I do about 45 minutes to an hour of like meditation, prayer, that type of stuff. And then from there, I grab a little breakfast and then I go on a walk. And during my walk, I do my breathing exercises and incantations. And then I go to the gym and I work out for about 30, 45 minutes. And after that, that's like my 5-6 day a week morning routine. It takes about 2 hours. And after that, I am the most inspired to like really take on anything in my day.
Routine is so important. I didn't make a resolution this year. Instead, I thought of two or three words to kind of as mantras to kind of guide me throughout the year. And one of them is habits. I want to just be more efficient at creating habits for myself because I think it's so important.
Yeah, our habits create our results. They really do. That's why I love routines so much, that because I'm going for a certain result that I want, and I know that these habits are going to bring us there.
Well, Sugar, on that note, let's fucking end this show because I'm inspired right now. Like I just, everybody, read the book, read The Voice of Your Dreams. Go to Amazon, go to buy. You can go to Aaron's website, thevoiceofyourdreams.com. Where else can people find you, Aaron? And if they want to start singing, or if they want to stalk your Instagram because you're handsome, where can they get you?
If they want to start singing, they can go to superiorsingingmethod.com. And other than that, all my social media is at Aaron Anastasi. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
And of course, we'll have those and the show notes and the links. Also, we'll talk about, I'll try to remember to put a link to The Artist Way, The Artist Soul, Eat That. We're going to talk about Eat That Frog, a little Mark Twain, and Three Laws of Performance. I'll try to put everything. If I don't do it, Jackie Wiseman, my dedicated listener, she'll tell me I messed up. So I love that. I love how my listeners are like, hey, you said you were going to do this. You forgot. I'm like, okay, I'm on it. So Aaron, thank you so much. This was just such a joy for me. And I love connecting with you. It was great.
Thank you, Matt. Likewise, I feel exactly the same. Thank you.
Of course. And for everybody else, I'll see you next week. Do something for someone, and we'll see you next week. Bye. Well, I told you, Sugars, I don't lie. It's really great. You can actually download this book, The Voice of Your Dreams, on my Kindle. And I love my Paperwhite Kindle. I could do an advertisement for them. That shit is good. It doesn't hurt my hand. Anyway, love this episode. I hope your mind is kind of churning and thinking about possibilities for your life, of ways you could reattack things, or again move forward with things that you've been feeling stuck on. If you have listened to this show and you felt that, tweet me at Twitter, TheMattMar, Instagram me, Facebook. Don't Snapchat. You know, don't do that shit. But yeah, you can go to Facebook, The Matt Maher, or go to the website, Dear Matty Show. Sugar, we need some questions. You heard me mention that on the show. We need some questions. So go to DearMattyShow.com to get a little bit of life advice. Maybe you had a Valentine's Day hiccup. Dear Matty, I'm going to help out with that, Sugars. Also, it's going strong. Jake and I are doing our Riverdale podcast. That's on the YouTube channel at YouTube Talk to Matt Maher. That's all in the links as well. Sugar, some people say they don't even watch the Riverdale show. They just like watching Jake and I be mean to each other and catty. So, hey, if that's your thing too, watch as well. I'm really having a ball. It's nice to do kind of, I love doing Dear Matty. I'm going to keep doing Dear Matty, so don't worry about it because it's my heart. But it's also nice doing something that I feel like I exercise my funny bone. So, and that's going to start a podcast on that. We're just waiting for tech stuff and my tech guy to get back from Amsterdam. So, Patrick, who's amazing. So, I know, he's in Amsterdam. He's going to be like, God damn it, I almost made a whole show without you mentioning me again, Matt Maher. And I had to bring it up, Patrick. You're just too wonderful. So, and I love you. So, anyway, a lot of exciting stuff. I'm everywhere, Sugars, or at least trying to be. All right. I love you guys. Hope you have the best Valentine's Days. And moreover, I hope you're just feeling love and sharing love. All right. Bye.